Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, investigative reporter Marshall Allen is back to discuss his book, Never Pay the First Bill, and other ways to fight the healthcare system and win. We had a huge response when he was on a few months ago, so we decided to invite him back to continue this important conversation. For the past 15 years, Marshall Allen has been reporting on why we pay so much for healthcare and get so little in return. He has spent years hearing stories from people who've been overbilled and taken advantage of by the system. It has even happened to his own family members. Medical bills can be thousands, sometimes even hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they can financially ruin families for lifetimes. In Never Pay the First Bill, Marshall Allen provides detailed information on how to fight overbilling, price gouging, insurance denials, and high drug costs. Marshall Allen most recently covered the healthcare industry for ProPublica. He teaches investigative reporting at the Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY. Hi, Marshall. Welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us again.
It is a pleasure to be here with you, Rose. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's great to have you. And I actually thought about you about a month ago because I went to the doctor for the third time this year. And I got, I think it was like a $500 bill. And I called my insurance company and they said, oh, you're only allowed 2 doctor visits a year. And I said, I did not know that. Can you please make an adjustment? And they said, let me look into it. And so they did. And they said, if you can just pay the copay of $45, we will make the adjustment.
Wow. So you just saved $455 by asking that question?
One phone call.
Incredible.
And I think this has happened many times. I've saved thousands of dollars by just calling.
That is an awesome example because I think sometimes we think it's too hard to do this or it's impossible for patients to figure out how to do this. And sometimes it's really, really easy. You just have to ask. Sometimes you need to persist. Sometimes you have to fight. But sometimes it's as simple as just asking a question. I mean, that, you know, look at your return on investment of your time there. That's huge.
It is huge. And it also just raises so many questions. I mean, we have a system where you can only go to the doctor twice. I mean, luckily, this is not an emergency for me. But I thought, well, what about the people who have no choice but to go to a doctor 3, 4, 5 times in a year, and they're getting these $500 bills every time?
Yeah, I don't know what kind of a health plan only allows you to go twice a year to the doctor. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And also think about, you know, we can celebrate your victory, but think about all the people who wouldn't ask that question and who would either pay that bill and lose, you know, $455 or maybe be put into debt because of that bill, because about 40% of Americans only have about $400 in their savings account. Mm-hmm. That's according to research by the Federal Reserve. And so if you think about your $455 bill would have tapped the savings, the entire savings account of about half of the American people. Mm. And so that's a massive amount of money, right? And most people wouldn't know that they could push back and ask the question. And those people, about half of them, would be likely put into debt. And right now we have about 1 in 5 Americans that's got medical debt in collections. It's a massive burden on working Americans. And a lot of times it's because of these nonsensical rules that they don't tell you about. Oh, by the way, didn't you know you were only allowed to go to your doctor twice in the year? Well, no, who would know that? You know?
Right, exactly.
What I try and debunk in my book is the idea that you can't do anything about this because you can. And then also debunk the idea that this system is somehow competent or sensible in the way it bills people for services, because these charges often are in error and they're often overpriced. And so, you know, a lot of people just don't realize that. You think when you go to a hospital or you go to a doctor that because your doctor and your nurse or your physical therapist, they're competent, at least you trust that they're competent, and I assume that they are, So you think that the billing side of the industry is competent, and actually it's quite the opposite. It is so antiquated in the way they process bills. The bills are riddled with mistakes, and the prices have so much unjustifiable variation in them that they make a practice of charging people way more for the same service that they would charge other people. Well, you just have to know that you can push.
To this point, Marshall, this is so important because you really have to take the time to do your homework. And if you're really sick and you don't have, you know, a support network around you, how do you do all of this homework? As you point out in your book, the healthcare industry players bestow special customer status on one another, and the insurance companies set their rates in secret with hospitals and then demand that we pay them even if they're unfair.
Right.
So the other thing that's so interesting, and another tip to give people, and you talk about this in your book, and we talked about this last time you were on the show. When I got that $500 bill, I called the provider and said, if I decide to come back for one more appointment, what would you charge me if I pay out of pocket? Because I'm getting charged $500 by my insurance company. And they said, you know, we'll come up with some sort of discount, 20 to 30%. But that's still really high.
Yeah, that's really high. That's surprising that it would be that high. And it may depend on the type of visit or the services that they were providing. But
right.
You know, all these things are negotiable, you know, and you do have to be assertive enough to negotiate and make those calls. You also, as you pointed out, have to be healthy enough to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, why being a consumer in the healthcare world is a lot different than being a consumer looking for a new car or going to choose what restaurant you and your family want to eat at, you know, on a Friday night, because we are vulnerable. And unfortunately, because we're sick, and because we need that medication or that test or that treatment, we're really vulnerable to being exploited because of our vulnerability. And so that's a big part of the problem with pricing in healthcare, is that they're actually exploiting our sickness for profit. And so my book really makes more of a moral and an ethical argument about why that's not right, why it's not fair to take advantage of people who are sick and say, oh, well, we'll give you a 20% discount, when really, like, seriously, what's the lowest priced insurance company discount that they're getting? They should give you that same deal. You know, there's no reason why one patient should spend way more than another for the exact same services just because of the type of insurance coverage they have.
Well, if you have any questions for Marshall about how to take on this system, how to fight overbilling, price gouging, insurance denials, this is another huge one, and high drug costs, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. So Marshall, since we had you on last time, you shared so many stories, and I'm sure since then you've heard many, many more. What has really stood out for you in the past couple of months?
Well, I think the thing that I've been enjoying the most since my book came out on June 22nd is hearing reports from people who have fought back and won. Like, I love these. I just call them victory stories. I really enjoy when people leave an Amazon review and tell me about a victory, or send me an email. It's really been satisfying for me. So one I can give you an example of, I have a chapter in the book about insurance company denials. You know, often, well, you just experienced one, right? Where they actually were able to waive it and make you pay the copay. But it's very satisfying to me when somebody's able to fight an insurance company that's denied them the services that they should get covered, and then they actually win that battle. And so I'll give you an example. This was a woman named Alexia Kalal, who lives in South Dakota. She's married with two kids, and she went to the doctor for an elective procedure. The hospital called the insurance company and told her, oh, they approved it. They cleared it. Well, that's not actually what happened. What actually happened is, when the hospital called the insurance company said, well, if it's an outpatient procedure, meaning it's not an overnight procedure, you don't need to have it approved. So they didn't approve it. They said it didn't need approval. Well, then she got a bill for $78,000 related to this procedure. again, she did the right thing. Her hospital and doctor told her that this was covered. She thought she was covered. Well, she gets hit with a $78,000 bill, and they would not back off. And so I helped her put together an appeal memo. You know, I really show in my book that when you're fighting these insurance company appeals, you have to treat it like a violation of a contract that they have with you. Because our tendency is to get really emotional, which for good reason. Alexia and her husband, who's a truck driver, were facing bankruptcy. They actually consulted with bankruptcy attorneys because their family couldn't handle this $78,000 bill. And they also got their employer involved. That's another thing I recommend. If you're being denied care by your insurance company and you're in an employer-sponsored plan, meaning it comes through your work, get your employer involved in fighting that for you. Get your insurance broker or advisor who works with your employer, get them involved. And actually, that's what led to success for her. So her employer put some pressure on the insurance company and said, hey, if this is how you're going to treat our employees, we're going to have to start shopping for a different insurance plan. Well, sure enough, the insurance company ended up paying a portion of the bill, and then the hospital waived the rest of the bill. And so all of a sudden, this entire $78,000 debt was forgiven. And that gave them a whole new lease on life. And if you look at my Amazon page for my book, Never Pay the First Bill, you can even see she put a picture of the bill where it says total charges, $78,612. And then it says balance due on the account, zero. So that's just a huge, huge win for that family. And again, it's sad that we have to do these fights, right? Mm-hmm. But if we don't stand up and fight back, we're just going to keep getting steamrolled. And in this case, they would have been filing for bankruptcy.
Wow. Well, and also just to bring this home, to think that one in five people in the U.S. have medical debt. And in this case, what is it, 78 grand? I mean, I can't even imagine. This really does take a toll on people. For life. It takes a toll on the family. They can't get out of it. Can you just talk about, I mean, I think about putting five of my friends in a room. I mean, that's a lot of people who are dealing with medical debt.
Well, what I like to tell people is if you and your family haven't experienced medical debt on your own, you can be guaranteed that some of your friends have. This is such a common problem. And sometimes it feels stigmatizing, you know, to think you have debt collectors calling you, really hounding you to get you to pay. And they'll leverage that sense of stigma and that sense of shame. And what I try and emphasize in my book is that if you have medical debt in collections, this is not a result of you doing something wrong, right? I mean, you haven't been like an irresponsible consumer who went on a trip to Disney World that you couldn't afford or racked up a bunch of credit card debt with a bunch of online purchases that you shouldn't have made. This medical debt is a result of you or a loved one having to go to a doctor, having to go to an emergency room, needing to go to the hospital. People cannot help when they get sick. You know, obviously, there are some things we can all do to make sure we live a healthy lifestyle. But generally speaking, people cannot help when they get sick. And then add that to the fact that the charges at hospitals are so out of line with reality. Again, remember, they're often exploiting our sickness for profit. They're overcharging us. And layer onto that the fact that many medical bills, in fact, people who look at medical bills for a living and examine them would tell you that most medical bills contain some type of an error in it. So imagine you have an error-laden, overpriced medical bill for some type of care that the patient wasn't doing as a luxury, or, you know, they had to get the care because they needed it for their betterment and for their health. Then you're stuck in medical debt because of that. There is no stigma. There is no shame with having medical debt in collections. It's just now there's a problem. And then what strategies do you take to actually address the problem? And that's what I also show people how to do in the book.
And you make an important point. The fight is not over if the debt collectors are bothering you.
No, it's not. In fact, it's just entered a different phase. And so each kind of step in the process requires a different strategy and different tactics to navigate your way through it. But the kind of darkly encouraging side of medical debt in collections is that the hospital or the doctor or whoever has sent you to collections has basically given up on collecting any money from you. And so it gives you a lot more leverage to push back, to try and negotiate a better deal. And the key there is to begin negotiating. And the experts I talked to said that you might even be able to get down to an 85% discount on the medical debt that you have in collections. So there's a great opportunity to save a lot of money if you have medical debt in collections. You just have to know how to negotiate it.
Today, we are speaking with Marshall Allen, author of the important book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. If you have a story to share, if you have any questions for Marshall about how to navigate this system, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's hear from Rich in San Francisco. Hi, Rich. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate this topic. It's, I think we have an endemic problem in this country with health insurance and insurance in general. And so I just have my own story. And this is from, you know, over 10 years ago. We had a NICU unit transfer during our childbirth, and unfortunately lost our child in the process a day or two later. And, that wasn't bad enough in itself. We had really good insurance, at that time, at least we thought we did. And then at the end of the process, we got probably over a $70,000 bill from the hospital. They dinged us, I think, $14,000 for, out of network transfer from one hospital to another. It was the same family of hospitals. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to shop around for ambulances in that moment in the emergency. So we got $14,000 transfers, and this is in San Francisco. And then I think we got about a $35,000 bill for the private hotel room, which we never asked for. I think you can probably get a private hotel room in the Ritz for less than that, but not our hotel room. We had private hospital room, and we never asked for the private hospital room, but they put us in one anyway, and I got a $35,000 bill for that. So it was over a $70,000 bill, and thankfully, there's no greater wrath than a mother who's lost their child, and my wife, being very educated, got on the warpath with the insurance company and got it down, I think, to $20,000, which is still a lot, but a great difference between $70,000 and $20,000. So, you can fight these people. I have a company that has a group healthcare plan for my employees, and I always tell them, we can fight this. But don't ever roll over and just pay. You can fight it, and they do expect a fight, and they will negotiate at the end of the day.
Mm.
So that's my story.
Rich, I'm so, so sorry for your loss, and gosh, what an awful story. I mean, Marshall, to think that Rich and his wife and family are just devastated by this horrific loss, and then they receive these massive bills.
It's heartbreaking to think of a family and parents in that situation. And I think it illustrates the cruelty of our healthcare system on the financial side. It is a cruel system that would have an infant die in the NICU, and then they come after the parents for something like an out-of-network transfer, which is ridiculous, because how would the family know, that they're in-network or out-of-network? And then to also then charge $35,000 for hotel rooms or whatever that is in the hospital. I mean, it is a cruel, inhumane way to treat people. And this is where what I think it illustrates is that the insurance companies and the hospitals and the doctors and others, when it comes to the financial side of our healthcare system, they have created a system that works for their benefit and works for them. They have not treated the patients like the paying customers that we are. They have not organized healthcare in a way in the United States that actually makes sense for the patients. I mean, talk to anybody who has any complex medical issue. It's such a fragmented system. You know, you have to go from one doctor to the next doctor to the next doctor. You have to go to this hospital or that hospital. It's a very confusing, fragmented, disconnected system. The medical record systems don't talk to each other. It is incredibly cruel and inhumane. And I think Rich's case, Rich, I'm really just sorry. I appreciate you sharing that story. But it's just so sad that families would be treated that way. And so when people talk about us having the best healthcare system in the world, I think that's true if you're wealthy enough to afford it. But for most working Americans, certainly middle-class people, that's not actually the case. I mean, you know, this is a story that really, really illustrates that.
Yeah. Wow. Well, again, Rich, so sorry for your loss. And thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. Let's go next to Jan in Berkeley. Hi, Jan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, this is the most absurd story. I was in a car accident about a year ago, and I actually kind of got knocked out, and I woke up, and after I was up for about maybe 10 minutes or so trying to figure out, oh, I was in a car accident, and looking around, then an ambulance came, and they, I don't know how they got me out because my door was totally smashed in, but I sort of went back out, and the next thing I knew, I was in the ambulance, and we were on our way, and I asked them to take me to Alta Bates because I live near Alta Bates in Berkeley, and we were in Pinole. So they got permission to drive me to Alta Bates, and we're driving along, and I'm still very unclear about everything, but all of a sudden they stop and then they say, oh, we're going to take you and put you in another ambulance. And then they did that. I was coming in and out of awareness. And then they went on to Alta Bates, and then after that everything went kind of smoothly and I got to go home that same day. But when I got the bill about a month later, it was really expensive, and I knew that ambulances are expensive. And then the next day, I got another bill, and I thought, huh, they sent me two bills for the ambulance. And I called. The ambulance had had a flat tire, so they had to call another ambulance, and that was the point at which they moved me. And I got billed for two ambulances.
Oh, wow.
So when I called in and I talked to the health insurance, you know, I was just appalled. And the woman I talked to, although normally they don't take a position, they just move you on, but she said, that doesn't sound right. And then she moved me to someone else who also said, that doesn't sound right, and I'll give you to someone else. And they kept moving me, and finally I got to somebody who said, that's not right. And it took a long time for it to all be straightened out. And
Jan, we have to go to break in a second, but did you have anyone to help you with all of this as you're trying to recover from this accident?
No, I called myself by phone, but that I only paid for one of the ambulances.
Wow. Well, Jan, gosh, thank you for sharing that story. And after a break, we'll talk more about this because, you know, I've been advocating for two loved ones and it's almost like a full-time job. And so if you don't have someone to advocate for you, that's the other question we'll ask Marshall is what can you do to make it as simple and stress-free as possible, because it's such a hard system to navigate. Thank you so much, Jan, and I'm sorry you got at least one of those ambulances off your bill. Today, we're speaking with Marshall Allen about his book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are speaking with Marshall Allen, an investigative reporter who has spent 15 years writing about why we pay so much for healthcare and get so little in return. He is out with an important book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. He provides detailed information on how to fight overbilling, price gouging, insurance denials, and high drug costs. Marshall also provides information on how to get financial aid, how to use small claims court, and then also how to find billing codes for procedures in advance. Of course, this all takes a lot of time. If you have any questions for Marshall or a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. Marshall, before the break, we were talking with Jan, who had to navigate this just after she got in a car accident and had to fight to bring her bills down. So what tips do you have for people who do not have someone who can do all of that legwork for them?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised the ambulance company didn't charge her for changing the tire on that ambulance. You know, it seems like they lard up medical bills with so many unnecessary charges. It's almost like you'd have to see if they have a billing code for that tire repair. But I think that we have to advocate for one another. And you mentioned that you do this for people in your family. And I also do it for people in my family or people who reach out to me. And if anybody wants to find me, my website is marshallallen.com. And people can subscribe to my newsletter and get a free copy of the introduction of my book if they're interested in that. But I think it's important for those of us who can advocate for ourselves and others to do so, because I think there are so many of us who are in this position. So many of us have these crazy stories, you know. Sometimes it's a difficult fight. Sometimes it's an easy one, like the one you shared earlier. But a lot of people aren't able to fight back for themselves, you know, whether they're too sick or they are in a position where maybe they're working multiple jobs and just don't have time to keep up with the emails and the phone calls. You know, it takes persistence sometimes to win these battles. And so I like to think of it myself and try and encourage people who can fight back to do so. Because when we fight back, we're standing up for ourselves, but we're also standing up for all the other people who are getting inaccurate or unfair medical bills. And I hope at some point we could have a little more humanity in the system. But until that happens, we need to be advocating for ourselves, be advocating for one another's, and empowering people just to do at least the easy things they can do to avoid these pitfalls. For example, one thing that people can do, if you understand in advance that price variation exists throughout the healthcare system, there are a lot of times where you can look around and find a better price. For example, let's say you needed an MRI or a CT scan, and your doctor refers you to an imaging center that's affiliated with your local hospital. People wouldn't necessarily know this, but studies have shown, and it's consistent across the country, that hospital-based imaging centers are the most expensive places to get x-rays or MRIs or CT scans. So if all you need is one of these scans and it's elective, you know, you have the time to do it, if you check with an independent imaging center, you might pay thousands of dollars less for an MRI at an independent imaging center. It might cost you a few hundred dollars at an independent imaging center, whereas at a hospital imaging center, it might cost you a few thousand dollars. And so that's something that, you know, if we can avoid the problem to begin with by navigating away from the overpriced places for services, That's something that can be a big success so that we don't even get put in the position where we're getting hit with these outrageous bills.
To your point, I had an experience with this recently and called the same independent MRI imaging center in two different cities in the Bay Area. In one city, it was, I think, $1,200 or $1,500. In another city, it was $350. And this is the same company, but just a different part of the Bay Area.
That's amazing. And it's the same type of imaging test, right? You're not getting a different MRI.
Right.
And so I think no one would realize this, right? A layperson would not understand that this is the way it is because it's so crazy, frankly. You know, if you buy an expensive car or an expensive house in San Francisco or where I live in New Jersey, you're going to get a nicer car and you're going to get a nicer house than if you buy a cheap one. But if you're just looking for a standard type of medical treatment or test or like an MRI, you can get that for prices that are exponentially less just by shopping around. I have a whole chapter in the book on how sometimes it's better to use cash instead of running things through your insurance plan. And again, that's counterintuitive because you assume if you have insurance that your insurance company has leveraged its buying power to get you a better deal. But that's actually often not the case. Oftentimes, the cash price is less than the insurance negotiated price. And so even if you have an insurance plan, ask for the cash price, especially when it comes to pharmacy. You see this a lot in pharmacy. I just talked to a friend of mine the other day who owns a pharmacy, and he said that he's not allowed under the contracts that they have with the pharmacy benefit managers to tell people when the cash price is less than the insured price. He's actually prohibited from doing that, but he is allowed to give them the cash price if they ask for it. And so he's always, hoping that people will ask for the cash price because he's not allowed to give it to them. And I asked him how often that happens. He estimated it's probably 40% of the time on drugs where the cash price is lower than the insured discounted price.
And while this is all happening, while we are talking about finding billing codes and making call after call after call, the profits of these health insurers are just massive. Just a couple of examples. The Guardian had a piece last month. Five of the country's largest health insurers reported more than $11 billion in profits in the second quarter. The rise in profits was a result of people seeking less medical care because of fears of COVID. And then Axios had a piece about United Health Group. They made $4.3 billion in profits for the second quarter alone. And if you look at 24 major hospital systems, nonprofit, they have a combined net profit of almost $12 billion.
Amazing. Axios also had the healthcare executive pay analysis. That one really caught my eye because you have healthcare executive making in the tens, even I think one of them was over $100 million. And so the amount of money in the system, I'm looking here, Joe Chiani of Masimo, which is based in Southern California, a medical device company, they have his earnings at more than $210 million last year. That's one guy. That's an incredible amount of money. And they had two other executives who surpassed the $100 million pay mark last year, Leonard Schleifer from Regeneron Pharmaceuticals and Paul Cusero of Amedesis, a home health and hospice company. So we're talking the salaries of some of these executives are over $100 million. Many of them are over in the tens of millions. And many more than that are in the millions. And so the problem isn't that there's not enough money in the system, or the problem isn't that we as individual Americans are not paying enough. The problem is our money is being wasted, in our view, as payers. Our money is being wasted on things like high salaries, ridiculous prices, unnecessary treatment. I mean, these are the things that are sucking all of our compensation as working Americans out of our paychecks. And it's also holding down our income growth over the years. And so when you know this, again, this is stuff I lay out in my book. When you know there's this much waste in the system, I mean, they estimate that about 25% of all healthcare spending in America is not going toward actual care that people need. It's going toward this administrative bloat, ridiculous salaries, unnecessary care, and other things like that. If you know that 25% of what's being spent is wasted, that is really an empowering piece of knowledge to know. So when we push back with our insurance company or with our hospital, we know that they could get by with less. They're not being efficient with the money they have, and then they keep demanding more from us. It's really time for us as consumers and as employers to begin pushing back and saying, you know what, it's time that we get a fair deal, because we can't continue with the system the way it is now.
So we'll get to calls in a minute. I want to ask you one political question. Forbes had a piece, how the COVID vaccine injected billions into big pharma and made its executives very rich. And then The Nation has a piece, has big pharma bought enough Democrats to derail Biden's plan? So in this reconciliation bill, the plan is to bring the Medicare age down to 55 and then expand Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and vision, finally. And then the other big piece of it would allow Medicare to renegotiate drug prices just like the VA does today. And yet, John Nichols reports, when the House Energy and Commerce Committee reviewed a proposal for government negotiations to lower drug prices, three Democrats, Kathleen Rice of New York, Scott Peters of California, and Kurt Schrader of Oregon, voted no. Their votes, in combination with the Republican no votes, created a tie that blocked approval of the reform by the key committee. And these three Democrats get money from Big Pharma.
Well, I, you know, that's not a surprise to me. And when you look at the Republicans or the Democrats over the years, all of our elected officials have had a chance to improve this system. And as I say in my book, our healthcare system isn't broken. It was made this way. It was made this way for the benefit of the people in the industry without regard to the patients. And, you know, this woman who got the two ambulance bills because one ambulance got a flat tire, that's a perfect example, right? They don't really think about it from the patient's point of view. Oh, wait, it wasn't the patient's fault that the ambulance got a flat. They just continue to send bills. They're on autopilot. There's not a quality control mechanism. There's not a mechanism in place that's thinking about what's fair for the patients. It really is a big machine where people are doing what they do to make money. It's just business on their side of it. And so I don't put a lot of hope in the politicians figuring this out for us on either side of the aisle. And so that's why my hope really is that the employers and the employees, it's really them who are paying the highest costs. If working Americans and employers could work together and push back against the system, I think there is a tremendous opportunity for true, meaningful healthcare reform that would actually be disruptive and drive the cost down, because that's what we haven't seen. We have not seen disruption in healthcare the way we've seen it in other industries.
So can you be a little, can you elaborate on that? What do you think, if it's not the politicians and if three Dems have the power to, you know, stop drug negotiation under Medicare, what is? So what can people and employers do to make this change?
Well, employers have a huge amount of leverage and an amazing opportunity. Employers are, and employees really have the oxygen that the healthcare industry needs to survive, and that's the money. I mean, when you look at the amount of money that employers and employees are spending, there's about 155 million Americans covered by employer-sponsored health plans. That's bigger than Medicare and Medicaid. There's about 30 million more who are uninsured. So let's say we have about 185 million Americans who are in this pool of working Americans who are paying way more money than anyone else. If they started to push back the way we've been talking about here, if even 1% of that 180 million started pushing back. And, you know, in the book, I have some relatively, some people would say aggressive tactics to push back. For instance, if you get a surprise medical bill from an out-of-network provider, or if you get billed for another ambulance bill just because your ambulance got a flat, in a lot of states, those bills would be covered under the limits of small claims court in your state. In my book, I have a chapter that shows people how to sue in small claims court to protect yourself. And small claims court is made for powerless, weaker individuals to stand up to powerful corporations and individuals. What a perfect place for us to have the court system help us get a fair deal. And I've been helping patients do this, and they're having success. And usually it doesn't even go to court, because you don't necessarily need it to go to trial. You just need to give them the incentive they need to treat you fairly. And so when you file that case, it costs about $30. You file the case, and now they have to hire an attorney for hundreds of dollars an hour to protect themselves and argue on their behalf. They don't want to spend that money. A lot of these bills are only worth a few hundred or a few thousand dollars. So if we had more consumers being empowered, standing up for themselves, pushing back, I think it would have a revolutionary effect. And I'm taking my book to the next level now with a series of health literacy videos that take the how-to tactics from the book, communicate it in about 15 short 3 to 5 minute videos. And I'm going to be rolling those out to employer-sponsored health plans and consumers all over the country, so that people can be equipped and empowered to actually fight these battles and win. And if people are interested, I'm running an Indiegogo campaign right now. You can look up the Never Pay Pathway on Indiegogo. And if you're interested in helping fund the production of them, that would be great. If not, no problem. But I'll be rolling those out soon. So I'm really on this health literacy campaign because I know that employers can do this. They just haven't had the courage to fight yet. They've just been paying more and passing costs on to their employees.
And if you want to find a sample letter to fill out to send to appeal to a small claims court, you can find that at the end of Marshall Allen's book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System. There are so many tips in here, and he gives you, for example, these letters and stories about people who have successfully fought medical bills. Let's go to a few more callers. Let's hear from Jenna in San Francisco. Hi, Jenna. Thanks for holding. Hi, Jenna. Okay, sorry, maybe Jenna dropped. Let's go to Greg. Oh,
hello.
Hi, Jenna.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling as someone who, I'm really looking forward to reading Marshall's book, but as a consumer who, I was uninsured for a long time, fearful of medical bills and debt, and then also as someone who was a former clinic manager, and I feel like I just want to bring the voice to the fact that, you know, when I worked with a billing service in an academic medical clinic, and, you know, I was just really trying to make sure our bills got paid too. And we would work with patients who a lot of times didn't understand their insurance, PPOs or in-network, out-of-network, and we would really try to help advocate for them. And, but, you know, I had to pay my staff. We wanted to make sure, you know, their insurance was covered, that we could order the right supplies our providers needed. So I can't speak to other clinics and maybe other unethical practices, but I know that I just want to at least give voice to those of us that were working in the medical field that were trying to do our best. And really, you know, insurances, their costs are, I mean, yeah, medical side, sometimes the rates are inflated because we know insurances will only pay a smaller portion of that. And we had a mixed payer reimbursement with, like, Medi-Cal, which, you know, for a procedure, they would pay, like, you know, maybe 25% of what we would bill. So, like, we can't keep our doors open if we're not going to get reimbursed. So I want to at least put in that 2 cents, but also, again, as a consumer and, you know, I've got children and, you know, the fear of getting bills that don't get reimbursed by our insurance and knowing, like, oh my gosh, you know, I want them to be paid.
You're making a great point, Jenna.
Yeah.
You're making a great point. And, like, you know, I called the book Never Pay the First Bill. I don't mean never pay your bills. I just mean never pay the first bill until you have made sure that the bill is accurate and that the bill is fairly priced. And I think the point you're making is especially valuable, that, you know, the doctors, the hospitals, they're victimized by this crazy insurance reimbursement system, sometimes not in the same way as patients are, but they're also victims of this system. They have to deal with hundreds of health insurance plans, all with different requirements different types of coverage, different types of deductibles. What you're seeing now with the high deductible health plans, where the patients now have to pay more dollars up front, sometimes thousands up front, you're seeing more patients default on these payments to hospitals and doctors and clinics because they can't afford the bills, right? And so now you're seeing a cascading effect where doctors, hospitals, they now find themselves in the bill collecting business instead of the healthcare business. And so it's these bills, the claims they submit are often rejected by insurance companies. You know, some companies, I've looked at the data, they're rejecting up to 35% of the initial bills that get submitted by the healthcare providers. And so Jenna's talking about something that's very real, and it's a very real problem. And it's also why I feel like this system is really ripe for disruption right now, because it's crazy. Everybody knows it's crazy. Everybody knows this doesn't make sense. And this is why you find more and more clinics and doctors and even hospitals willing to negotiate cash prices, because they know if they can get that cash price and get that money up front, rather than having to go through the hassle of getting reimbursed by an insurance company, they know they're going to get that money, and it's going to cost them a lot less to get that money. And so that's why these cash prices sometimes are a lot lower than the insurance reimbursed prices. So Jenna, I think you're making really valuable points. I appreciate you giving us feedback.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Jenna. Marsha, well, we're almost out of time. One listener wants to know, is there a law or a right, not sure you can answer this because she lives in California, but to be given a cash price for a specific service?
So now hospitals are required to post cash prices on their websites for different services they provide. That's a federal rule that they have to post all their prices, including cash prices. I don't think they always have to have a cash price, though. So my general answer there is I don't think they have to have a cash price. But I'm finding more and more, I would say in the last 5 years, that way more clinics and doctors and even hospitals are willing to give cash prices. So ask for it. One thing they're not allowed to do is tell you that if you have insurance, you have to use your insurance plan. You hear that sometimes where they'll say, oh, well, if you're insured, we're required to make you use your insurance. Not true. Uh-huh. And I always like to tell people, if they ever tell you that, say, would you please cite the, is this a law? Is this a regulation? Would you please cite the rule that says that I have to use my insurance rather than paying cash? There's no such thing. Wow. But that's just something that they do tell people sometimes.
Such important information. Marshall, we would love to have you back because we got a lot of emails that we couldn't get to. But thank you again for your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose. I really enjoyed it, and I'd love to come back.
Great. Thank you. Marshall Allen is an investigative reporter and author of Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.